coming to you from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, by way of Stone Mountain, Georgia. Birthed by the great state of South Carolina, is the Bryant Land Country Podcast. Your place for any and everything in hunting, fishing, sports, and outdoor related. With heavy doses of randomness, guests, and an all-around good time. Here's your host, proud Gamecock. South Carolina forever. AB3.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Bryant Land Country Podcast. I am your host, AB3, episode number 10. Wow, cannot believe we are at episode number 10 already. Thank you for the support. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for subscribing to the Bryant Land Country Podcast. This has been truly amazing. I mean, we started this in hopes to be able to go out and talk to more people, be able to tell more stories, do it in a more efficient way than making the videos and everything that was coming along with going out and trying to make the videos. And already in less than 2 months, we've been able to tell 10 stories. Pretty awesome. Pretty amazing. Thank you guys again. I really, really appreciate it. I cannot, express my gratitude and humbleness enough for what you guys have done so far. Last week's episode, I want to touch back on that just a little bit. Jason Koger, episode number 9. Very special episode. Great guy. Remarkable story. If you haven't listened to it, please go back and do so. And the reason why I said that, because we received so much feedback, so much positivity from telling that story on that podcast. I mean, Jason, like I said, his story is just nothing short of remarkable, very uplifting. And you guys apparently really, really loved it because, like I said, it received so much positive feedback. Just want to say thank you for that as well and urge you to go back and take a listen to Jason Koger's story. I mean, we also received feedback just in general about the podcast and just the great things that we're doing on that. I mean, I had an inbox from a guy, angler and woodsman from up in the upstate of South Carolina area. And he sent me an inbox just saying, dude, finally got some time to listen to the podcast. Freaking loved it, man. Great stuff. Got a good thing going. Keep it up. Thank you, angler and woodsman, for sending that to me. And I mean, the more feedback we get like that, the more that it just lets us know that we're doing the right thing. And it lets us know that we got something going on here. So once again, appreciate to you guys that take the time to send us messages, send us feedback, little notes, inboxes, comments, things of that nature. Just want to thank you again for that. Now this week, I did something a little different. I reached out to a longtime friend of mine, a fellow named Bernie Samuels. Bernie and I have been friends for almost 30 years. Ever since middle school, we were grew up together, went to different high schools. He graduated as valedictorian from his high school, engineer at the Ford Motor Company. Probably the only bad decision that Bernie's made was he went to Clemson as opposed to going to Carolina. But other than that, just super, super, super awesome guy. Proud to call him my friend. He is a avid gun owner, gun enthusiast, Second Amendment supporter. So we sat down, we talked about that. Grew up in the country farming and probably not even knowing it, missed out on a lot of great hunting. Family got some properties in some areas and stuff. So we talk about that. Just two guys getting together, two friends, having a conversation, just talking about guns and hunting and things like that. So, I'm going to move out of the way here. You guys kick back and listen to my conversation with Mr. Bernie Samuel. Thank you for joining me this evening.
Nah, no problem. Anything for my brother here from another mother. So anything. Anytime.
Definitely.
Anytime, man. So, anytime.
I'm going to hop right into it. So the reason why I wanted to get you on, because ever since I've known you, going back to when we were kids, and then especially as adults when we kind of started making our own money and started working real jobs and stuff, you have been a gun fanatic. Like, your arsenal, I'm not going to put all your business in the street, but your arsenal is legendary. So
No, I'm not I'm there yet. Saying. I'm trying to get there though. I'm not there yet.
Like I'm saying, I'm not gonna put your business in the street, but your arsenal is pretty freaking impressive. Just take us back, man. Like, how did the whole thing, like, with you and guns get started? Was that something from like your dad? Like, where did that come from?
So you know this, but you know, just for the listening audience, I grew up on a small farm in South Carolina. Both of my grandparents, both sides of my family, had a small farm, so I'm a farm boy. Even though I'm living in Detroit metro area now, I'm a Southerner through and through. So, but my family always had firearms. You know, my dad always had a firearm, always had a rifle. I can remember going back, him teaching me how to shoot with a single shot 22 rifle that I still have.
You still got it? The very first one.
So
scope and everything, or just
yeah. From that time, I learned to shoot on a single-shot, bolt-action Stevens, I believe. You know, youth model 22 that my dad always has. So it's still back at my mom's house. My dad didn't have a large array of firearms because we didn't hunt. But just being on the farm, you always had a rifle there. He had a revolver, you know, here and there. Surprisingly, we didn't have a shotgun at the time, but I was always kind of around firearms, just there, you know, not a huge advocate, but not anti-gun by any stretch of the imagination, you know.
Right.
Even grandparents had an old shotgun. Go to my grandmother's house, there was a shotgun that stayed behind the door forever. I don't even know if the thing ever fired, but it stayed behind the door all my life.
Wow.
You know.
But Isn't that crazy though? Cause like nowadays you would get like ridiculed from here to there for keeping your guns out and keeping them unlocked and stuff. Like, man, we just knew, like, okay, you know, granddaddy had a shotgun over here, grandma had a pistol here, whatever. And you just knew, but you knew that wasn't a toy. You knew that wasn't for you to play with. Like, you couldn't do that now.
Exactly. Like, and now that you say about it, like, I knew where the rifle was at a young age. I'm talking 10, 12, the rifle was. Like, my grandmother talked to me behind the door, so I saw that forever. I didn't think anything of it. Like, okay, what's kind of this pipe-looking thing behind the door? As you get older, you realize, oh, shotgun's been behind the door forever. Like, oh, okay.
Right.
You know,
right.
My grandmother, like I said, had a little 22 revolver in a drawer. Like, okay, you know, this stuff growing up, like you said, God, we weren't even teenagers. You just knew this is where things were, and there weren't a toy. You didn't play with them. It was just known, hey, here's safety. You don't go playing with these, but they were always there. You always knew, being in a rural area, that, hey, they may be needed for self-defense. On my mother's side, she had chickens, so my grandfather always had a rifle. You know, if there's foxes or whatever at the chicken coop, you know, they were just part of life. This was just part of Southern farm life.
Not to mention the snakes. Don't forget about the snakes.
Oh my God. Yeah. Snakes, man. There were snakes all over the place.
Cottonmouths, rattlers, water moccasins.
Copperheads.
Right.
Like, I can remember walking through the property, almost stepping on a snake, like two times. One I didn't see. My dad stopped me from stepping on. The other one I did see, and it was a small copperhead.
Wow.
So it's like, this is the stuff you dealt with.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and fast forward to once I come of age to own my own firearm, I bought my own handgun. And that was, God, I think I was still at the great higher institution of learning at Clemson University.
God.
I believe it was a grad school there when I bought my first
higher
handgun.
Institution of learning,
so,
huh?
There you go. You know. Okay. I'll leave that one there.
Okay. Well, you needed a firearm in Clemson, because, hell, that was like leaving Lamar and going to Clemson was basically like, you know, it was, even though it was like, what, 3 hours apart, it's still the same thing, minus the below average college. Instead of a below average high school, there was a below average college.
Oh, here we go. The chickens are clucking now.
I'm just saying, you know, just to let some of the, you know, let the people in a little bit. So we went to rival high schools, Timminsville and Lamar in South Carolina, and then went off to college and went to rival colleges. So this little back and forth has been going on, oh my God, over 25 years.
Oh my God.
Right.
As long as we've known each other. And like, we've known each other so long, I can't remember.
And it's funny because I'm sitting
when
here.
When we first met.
And I'm trying to
think of,
like, when did we first meet? And I think I got a rough guesstimation. It's funny because I can't remember some things, and then there's some things that I can remember clear as day. And I remember being in Gifted and Talented in the summer, the Gifted and Talented program. And I remember playing kickball, and they kicked the ball all the way to the fence at the old high school. Yep. And you were the fastest son of a bitch that went and got that ball every time that ball was kicked in the outfield. And your mom was the librarian at middle school, and my mom was the ISS teacher. At the time, I think she was still subbing. And I think that, you know, my mom and your mom just kind of knew each other. And then,
you would come over,
you know, to the program. And then after that, with both of us growing up, you know, as only kids, we were just like, all right, cool. And then the rest is history.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. And I remember those summers, and I remember that program, but I was trying to think back, like, did we meet that first year of the program or whatever? Because we did that for a couple of summers, and I was like, I can't put a date on to
I can't
when.
Put a date so. Or age, but it was definitely, like, middle school.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was definitely, like, around middle school. Yeah. So,
I'm with you, man.
Let me ask you this real quick, because, you know, obviously your dad taught you how to shoot and, like you said, having guns around and stuff. Do you remember in the program when we would have to take the hunter safety, the wildlife man? You remember the wildlife man?
Yes. Because it was like the ultimate thing for the whole time during the summer. It was the DNR would come to a hunter safety class during this program during the summer. And so at the culmination of this hunter safety was essentially they would pull out skeet and do a thrower at the back of the car. And we would go to open field. And that was the culmination. And everybody was geeked as to who would score the highest for shooting these sporting clays. It was like the greatest thing ever. And it was there at least 3 or 4 summers, if not longer.
Yeah. Like we had I think after you finished the class, because I remember the book and everything. And then I remember, you know, like the skeet shooting and stuff. I don't remember like how many I hit, how many I scored. But like for me, that was the first time I ever handled
that.
A shotgun. But yes, I remember being super geeked about the wildlife man. I've told the wildlife man story like many times to other people. And they're like, well, why is it the wildlife man? It's like, it's the South Carolina DNR. But we didn't call it the South Carolina DNR. It was just
DNR.
Is the wildlife man coming today?
Is the wildlife man. Exactly. And it was, and I always remember shooting, and I always remember somewhere near the end of the class, they always taught you being aware of your surroundings of shooting, and they would always pull up this video picture and give you the scenario as to should you shoot or not shoot, and then zoom in to see, like, what dangers might have been if there was a hunter or if there was a house in this background behind this deer or whatever that was originally in the picture. And it was a good learning experience. And and it was always the thing at the end, like, okay, who's going to win this year? Who's going to be it?
Well, first of all, it's like, who's going to pass the class? And then, because you had to pass the hunter safety class, because if you didn't pass it, then you didn't get to do it. So I think everybody passed. Imagine that.
Right.
And then we would go out and shoot. But it's funny, you remember like all the details about the shooting and stuff. Yeah. I remember taking the class, and I remember the book, and I just remember looking at the book and like, that's a deer track, that's a raccoon track, that's a turkey track, that's a bobcat track, you know. And then all the other stuff that was in there, like the details about the shooting. All I remember is like, look, we got to pass this test. And then we get to go out and shoot. And then the crazy thing about it, when I started hunting, I forgot all about that. Like, I kind of remembered it, but I forgot all about it. Then we were going to Texas when I was taking my son to Texas, and we was going, you know, on our ATV trip, and then we was going to go hog hunting. And then I bought an out-of-state license in Texas, and it was like, well, do you have your hunter safety? And I was like, I don't know. Do I have my hunter safety? I was like, wait a minute. The wildlife man. Yeah, I got my hunter safety. So I went on the website, the South Carolina DNR website, put in some information, pulled it up. Lo and behold, it had yes. And I printed it out.
Oh, man. I got to go dig it up.
Even better, remember before they changed our street addresses before we changed the street address.
The route addresses.
Yes, when we had the route address, on my hunter safety card is my route address.
Oh, y'all. I got to do that. And for you folks that aren't from the country, we had route addresses. It didn't go by any street. It was just a route and some box number. They just went through and numbered the boxes. That was it.
And it's funny because I remember when they changed our street road, it became Holly Berry Lane.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look. Hold up. I'm pulling out it because I got the card in my wallet. And...
Dude,
yeah, it doesn't have the issue date. Have the correct issue date on it. But okay. Yeah, I still got it.
All right, cool deal. I'm good. Because I'm going back now remembering, okay, I remember my original route address. I'm trying to remember the second one. Yep, I remember that one too. Boom, I'm looking it up.
Yeah.
I'm looking it up.
Well, we finished. Go to the South Carolina DNR page, and the number, my birth date, everything is on there. My name, the address, I was blown away. And like I said, I completely forgot about it until we went to Texas, and I had to buy an out-of-state license, and they asked for hunter safety. And yeah, and I pulled it up and printed. Matter of fact, we were in a Holiday Inn in Louisiana when I pulled all that stuff up, and I printed it out right there at the Holiday Inn.
That is awesome, dude. That is awesome. I never would have thought that was in the system. Never.
I thought that it would have got lost, or like I was going to have to take hunter safety again, or, you know, whatever. But yeah, like it wasn't until I looked it up and I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe it's still here. So yeah.
Oh yeah.
And once you take it, it's good for life. So.
Oh yeah. Done.
Yeah.
Like you said, the thing at the culmination of that class was always, okay, we're shooting 12-gauge shotguns. Am I picking the semi-auto or I'm stepping up to the pump action? That was the decision at the end. That was the decision.
You remembered that too?
Yes.
Like, I don't remember that part. Wow.
Yes. But now, some years he only had the semi-auto and you would be bummed. At least I was bummed.
I don't remember that part. Golly.
Yes.
So
yes.
You prefer the pump.
I'm a pump action shotgun guy. So kind of fast forward, getting back into like the arsenal and stuff. So after moving to Michigan, I met some great friends at Ford that were really into firearms.
Okay.
You know, I mean, really into firearms. You say I'm into firearms? Nah, I just kind of got my toe in. I've met some great people that are all in.
Okay.
I mean, like anything new comes in, like boom, I'm buying it. I'm trying it. If I don't like it, I'll sell it later. I'm like, hold on, I got kids to pay for, man. You know, I can't roll like this. I can't buy stuff every 2 months, man. You know, I can't buy something every month. So started out with typical handgun, kind of where everybody starts. Bought a cheap, low quality handgun as the first, and then stepped up to some quality pieces. And then hanging out with some friends here, bought an AR-15. I was like, whoa, like there's a rifle now. You know, this is a long, this is a long way from the 22 bolt action. You're like, whoa, like this is cool. Like, and yes, there's all the stigma in the media about the AR-15, but once I got introduced to the platform and really understood what it was, what it's capable of, how modular and essentially flexible that platform could be, man, I was like, wow, nothing else really touches it. Between being able to, one, it's light, the multiple, and this is like a great time because, you know, I bought my first AR, it's probably been 15 years ago. But like that also was the time when all the other calibers were coming on board for the AR-15 platform, where the, you know, military and other people were investigating different chambers other than the 223 or 5.56. You know, people are looking at 6.8, people looking at 6.5 Grendel and some of the other offshoots when you start looking. And then after that time, you start having the 22 rimfire conversions available. So it was like the last 15 years have been like the cat's meow if you're interested in the AR-15 platform. Mm-hmm. Just as a platform for whatever you want to do, however you want to set it up, optics coming on board, you know, your red dot holographic sights coming on board and all the options there. It's like whatever task you want to achieve, you can do it with the AR-15. And that goes from home defense, self-defense, to across the gambit, from target shooting to hunting, mm-hmm. whatever game you want. You know, I think they got like, oh God, what's some of the larger bore that you get on AR-15/AR-10 platforms? You know, you got the whole gambit.
On yours, do you, like, what kind of optics are you running? Like, are you a big optics nut, or, you know, like with the red dot and everything, or what's your setup?
So pretty much what I'm running, and on a couple of my ARs, I'm running just red dot optics, because primarily what I do, what I practice for a lot, is more self-defense type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. I've got a 6.8 and an AR pistol, but I still have that set up just with a primary arms red dot sight. So that's still short range, just because here, where I'm here in Southeast Michigan, I don't really have a place where I can practice longer shots. You know,
right.
It'd be a different thing if I was back home, you know, out on the farm. Yeah, I could stretch it out. I could go and do a 300-yard shot. The reality where I'm at now in my local ranges,
mm-hmm.
they're all 100 yards at the most if you're outdoor. So a red dot is going to get it done. I've been eyeballing some of the 1-6, 1-8 optics. I haven't pulled the trigger because, quite frankly, I haven't had the need to really stretch any of my rifles out to anywhere in that range. So kind of what I've got, a couple of setups are traditional AR-15 with a handguard. I like the M-Lock handguards just for accessories and rails. So those work out a lot. I really, in the last year, really been eyeballing the AR-15 pistols.
Okay.
So that was my last purchase, really, because I was looking for something shorter in combat, compact.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got with that one, I've got an SB Tactical arm brace on there. There's a bunch of ATF hoopla around the arm braces, whether you can shoulder them or not. You know, that you'll get buried in the legalness stuff there. Not going to go down that path, but I really wanted that. Yeah, I know, right?
Right.
You know, like,
oh, yeah. That's a whole, that could be damn near a whole podcast by itself.
Exactly. But there's a couple of reasons I went that route. And I'm going to kind of step through a little bit. I wanted something smaller and compact just for home defense, self-defense. And then I also wanted something that was easy. If I needed to go travel quick, something that I could throw in a bag and be a little more discreet if I'm going out. And so this one, I think overall length is like 26-27 inches overall. So it meets that minimum overall length with the arm brace fully collapsed, and it's got an 8.5-inch barrel with a muzzle device on it. And this one I went 6.8 just because if you start looking at some of the ballistics and some of the concerns with 5.56 out of some of the shorter barrels,
mm-hmm.
there's some concern there ballistically. And a lot of guys are running 300 blackout. That's another option, too, especially if you're looking to go suppress. Personally, I haven't jumped into the full suppressor game just because with that being an NSA item, I wanted something where I don't have to worry about going back home. I can throw it in a bag.
Right.
I can throw everything in a bag. I don't have to notify anybody. I'm legal. I can drive everything home if I have to get back to South
right.
Carolina. So.
Right. Right.
And recently here in Michigan, short barrel rifles have become legal because they weren't legal in Michigan originally. Same with silent suppressors or silencers. Yes, my roots were here in Michigan. Yeah, that's another option too. You know, you could just build a short barrel rifle,
mm-hmm.
throw a silent suppressor on it, and be good. But I wanted something where it was easy for me to travel state lines without having to worry about you know, notifying anybody or being legal or what other jurisdictions' restrictions may be.
Right, have to worry about laws and traveling across the border and all that stuff.
Exactly. As you know, because you've done more hunting out of state, you just got to be mindful of what the laws are. You know, it's a little easier shot on the shotgun side because you don't have the caliber restrictions.
Right.
You know, but some states you can shoot, you can hunt deer with a 5.56. Some require something larger than a 30 caliber. So you've got to be on top of all of those things when you're traveling.
Yeah.
So
and see, that's why, like, it's simple, like, with shotgun. Like, you know, I've bought them back and forth to Wisconsin from Georgia, you know, on the plane or whatever, and it's usually not a problem. You know, occasionally you get, you know, an airline employee that's a little freaked out about it, and then they go through, you know, a whole bunch of stuff or whatnot. But for the most part, it's usually pretty easy. And then, like, on road trips and stuff, you just lock it up, throw it in there, and you know, you just get on down the road. So it's definitely a lot easier. But the thing I want to go back to, you were talking about, like, the ranges and stuff where you live. Like, how far is it to get to a rural area to go shoot? And then, like, are the ranges, like, nearby? Are they public, or do you have to join, like, a gun club, or, like, what's the deal down there?
What's surprising, and this is, you'll find this interesting, being, like, growing up in South Carolina, and we're from the PD area, there's so much rural property, there really isn't public gun ranges to go to if you're trying to take someone to. Like, I've been home and, like, okay, I want to go to a gun range, and I've gone by the gun stores in PD area in South Carolina. It's like, nah, I don't have a range. The closest range is an hour away in Columbia. So now,
oh, yeah. No, it pisses me off because I bought a shotgun down there a couple years ago, and I was, you know, all geeked up. I was like, I was going to get my shotgun and then go out in the range and stuff. And there's, like, one place in, like, near Florence that you can go in and shoot shotguns, and I don't think you can even, it's, like, only slugs, which is crazy because every other place I've gone to, you can shoot anything except for steel shot and slug.
Right.
So, it's super, like, backwards and weird.
Right. And so fast forward, I get to Michigan, you know, meet up with buddies and, like, hey, let's go to the range. I was like, how far we got to go? He's like, dude, their range is, like, within 30 minutes of my house. They are at least, I'm thinking out loud now, I don't want to name names, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 ranges that are open to the public.
Wow.
And I'm probably missing some.
Now, do they have the outdoor setup where you can do, you know, the sporting clays and the traps and stuff too?
So what I mentioned, most of those are indoor ranges, and most indoor ranges in Southeast Michigan allow pistol, rifle, only shotgun will be slugs. All right.
Mm.
So now there are some other private clubs that I haven't been to that are outdoor. Now, the cool thing about the one outdoor place that's closest to me is actually run by the DNR. So they have this full setup where they have Station A, I think 25, 50, and I believe 100-yard outdoor range.
Mm-hmm.
It's set up more for hunters, or if you're sighting in your rifle or whatnot. So they've got that.
Right.
So they're very restrictive as to being on the firing line. You've got to set up your target at a certain time. Everybody cleared, make the range safe. Everybody goes down and grab their target and everything. So that's how they're set up for their range. Now, they also run sporting clays there along with trap, skeet, and I believe, is it called five gun, where you go to the different station, or is it called five station?
Yeah, five stand.
Five stand.
Yep,
five stand.
Yep.
So they have that also there. So this is, like, for outdoors in the summer, this place is, like, the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
For where it's all there in one spot, and it's the greatest thing, man, and most of the time I've had some buddies, we would a lot of times do sporting clays, and they've got it set up where you can do, most of the time you go all the way around and just do, yeah, I think it's the 50 shot, because you score.
Yep.
So you could set up
You put two in, and then you go around, like, the five stand and stuff. Yeah, they got a place here in Wisconsin that I go to. Is actually a really awesome setup. It's outdoors, but the houses are all heated. So whether you're doing, you know, the five stand or whatever, you can go in and, you know, obviously you got to open, you know, your window or whatever, but when you're not shooting or whatever, the house itself is heated. That is pretty awesome. And I've done that a few times just trying to get ready for hunts and stuff. And then I found a place up in, I want to say Kennesaw outside of Atlanta that's actually indoor. You can do the five stand like that. But so what they did is it's like, I want to say it's the size of like two football fields.
Yeah.
And they coat it with, I can't remember the material, but they have like a special kind of material that's almost like a, like sheets that come down, you know, that over like all the walls and stuff.
Yeah.
So when you're shooting, like it catches like all the pellets and stuff.
That is awesome.
And you go inside and you could do it there. Yeah. You could do it there year round. Like it, and that would be something, man. That'd be like a gold mine, you know, if you could get something like that started, because especially somewhere like up here, like, you know, in Michigan where you live, or up here where I live, I mean, indoors, I mean, Jesus, you'd be making money hand over fist.
Exactly, because pretty much everything here, but like that range, you know, that shuts down. If there's snow on the ground, you know, it's like, it's a wrap. You come back in the spring, you know.
Right.
So that's why a lot of times you got a large selection of indoor ranges. And that really, coming here really fed my interest, because like we're talking about the differences between even having the gun ranges and even the gun stores here. What I've witnessed in the Midwest and in Michigan is, I mean, you go into a store, you got, especially if you're into tactical black rifle world, here's everything lined up on the wall. It's like you go in with your mouth dropped, you know,
right.
Like, oh my God, all of this is available. Like all of this is
right.
Like, all of this. And so just culturally, I had, I work in the auto industry, had a coworker come over from Australia. And so he was sharing me about how their gun laws has changed and whatnot. And their restrictions. I was like, well, should I take you to the range? We can go one day after work. So, you know, I pull out my AR, I pull out my shotgun, handguns and stuff, and take them in. Like, his head exploded when he went to the range. He was like, like, you can own all of this? Like, yeah. You know, he was familiar with firearms before their change in the laws. But, like, for him to see semi-auto firearms and the selection that you go, it's like, yeah, I could buy whatever, and you know, as long as I pass the background check,
right,
I don't have to wait. There's no wait for long guns. And here in Michigan, even though we have to go through and buy a pistol purchase permit and some of those laws, I've got my concealed pistol license, so even that, I just pull out my concealed pistol license, like, yep, I want this, boop, pass the background check, out the door I go.
Yeah, and see, that's how it is in Georgia with the weapons license. Like, I got my Georgia weapons license, and, you know, if I buy, you know, a shotgun or a pistol in Georgia or whatever, as long as I got my weapons license, I can just walk right out with it, because you got to pass the background check in order to get the weapons license, so you don't have to, you know, go through it twice or whatever.
Yep, they're going to do what's required federally, but, like, boom, like, I don't have to do any other hoops that I've already made sure my CPL is up to date. I'm good. But like you said, my coworker from Australia, his mind was blown. And just the what's there, what's available, what you want, and people are knowledgeable to show you what you need, man. You know, and you got some places that have a combination of the more self-defense stuff to some of the hunting stuff.
Right.
You know, it all depends what that surrounding area is looking for and what the customer base is looking for.
Right.
You know?
When you go back home, do you take a lot with you? Like, shoot, it's just kind of one of those things. It just depends on how long you're going to be home. Well, I know most of the time when you guys go, you know, you go for a while or whatever.
Right.
Do you take stuff home and shoot out there or what?
I do. And growing up on a small farm, typically, especially if I'm going home around 4th of July, some of my cousins on my dad's side of the family, typically have a family reunion get together if I'm there at the 4th of July. So if I'm going around that time, I've always got my gear with me, because the guys are just, as soon as I get there, cousins, we start looking around. It's like, you got your stuff? I'm like, yeah, I got my stuff. I'm good. It's like, you ready? You got your stuff? Yeah, I got my stuff. You ready? And so we're scheming as soon as we get there. Steven, like, so where we going shooting at? Where the spot? Like, I got a target. I got my targets with me. We going down to this spot on the property, or we going on this spot of the property. Where we going?
Right.
And so it's always a good time, man. Even though that side of the family, my cousins are a little older, man. And some, you know, we got family that from Maryland, some from Georgia, you know, just up the East Coast. But everybody knows, like, okay, we're about to go shoot and pull them out the targets. All right, what you got? Let's do it. And so it's always a good time, man. Everybody's pulling out. Like, I'll pull out my AR and my handgun. Another cousin pulls out his AR. Another one pulls out his shotgun or whatever he's got. And it's like, hey, is everybody packing twice?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That, yeah.
I gotta remember
when I, you know, because usually it somehow works out that we're usually home around the same time during the fourth. But usually when I get down there, I always have my bow and I'll have my target set up in the backyard and shoot my bow and stuff. And I never think to bring my gun. I got to remember to bring my shotgun and then come out there with my old Mossberg with my little three rounds, you know, from my old duck gun.
Listen,
and just,
man,
get out there.
You know where to find me. You know where I'm at. And,
yeah.
And so all the neighbors know when I'm home, because if I'm there for a while, everybody knows, being a farm boy, I'm going to be on the tractor a couple of days. That's a given. My wife knows.
Tractor and what? What are you doing? Because there's nothing. Wait, just bush hogging? Because all the animals are gone.
Animals gone, but between my uncle was there in the area on the regular. So most of the time he's bush hogging the area. If I'm there,
okay,
sometime I may alternate between bush hogging, or sometimes I may decide to diss up the property, or sometimes some years I would even throw in the plow and plow the property. Side note, I've been getting on my uncle because a couple of fields that were clear, we've got pecan trees in the area, and squirrels and whatever have been dropping pecan in the field. And my uncle's like leaving all the pecan trees in the middle of the field. I'm like, dude, man, like, if you don't let them grow, you could have let them grow on a straight row. You could have planted them in a row. I'm like, you try to grow a pecan, aren't you? And it's just like, but yeah, it was just funny.
Oh,
it's just
God.
Funny, man. I give him a hard time. He was like, man, wherever the squirrels left it, that's where I'm leaving them. I'm like, dude. You can't go straight across
the
field for nothing. It's like people actually did everywhere. I'm like, dude, you killing me.
He said he don't want no parts of it. He don't want no parts of it. I don't blame him.
Oh, man.
What?
Yeah, man. What he like, wherever the squirrels and God planted them, that's where I'm leaving them. I'm like, man, you got to go. You got to zigzag all over the field to dodge the trees.
You don't want no parts of it, man. You don't want no parts of it. But the thing, you know, it's funny because, you know, I'm sitting here, you talking about this property, you talking about, you know, bush hogging and stuff. When you come down in July, or if you come down before then, you need to let me know, because I'll gladly, you know, help out with bush hogging for access for some spring turkeys.
All right. Done.
I've been looking, you know, for a place, and hopefully long term at some point, someday, I want to buy a place in South Carolina, another little hunting property to kind of cultivate like the one I'm doing down in Georgia. But, you know, I would love for some access to get after some turkeys, and maybe even, you know, if you got a deer or two down there, I could take off your hands.
Hey, done, brother, done. Between the two properties, because I've seen the turkeys, I've been seeing the deer, and it's crazy for me. Even when I was home last year, going through part of the back of the property, the edge of the field, I was like, is that a turkey? Like, all my life growing up there, never saw a wild turkey, ever. Ever. Never, like, growing up, you didn't hear anybody going turkey hunting. Like, everybody was deer hunting. And you're like, where does this wild turkey come from? And I mean, I saw like three. I was like, where you guys come from? Like, this is crazy.
And see, that's why I don't understand. Like, y'all got like access or you got access to all this stuff and never did any hunting or anything. Like,
just never.
It's amazing to me and it's funny because I vaguely remember as a kid going back there with y'all, and the only thing that I remember is the pigs.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the pig pen.
Yep.
That's like the big, like, that's the thing that sticks out, like all that black dirt and, you know, like however many pigs y'all had or whatever. But yeah, it's funny. Like it wasn't obviously on any of our minds of hunting anything.
No.
It was just like, all right, there's this pig pen. But it's just funny how that works.
Yeah. And like you said, right there, the property that you're referring to near my mom's, like, nobody really went hunting around there. You know, there's rabbits there. We always had rabbits around there. But growing up, you rarely saw a deer track through there. You know, when we plant soybeans, mm-hmm. you knew there would be some because they would eat the road near the edge of the woods. But it wasn't nothing to think about or even the turkeys there. And to my other mm-hmm. grandparents' property down in Effingham, guys that my grandparents knew, they would give permission to hunt. We would always get venison from there. But those were families that my grandparents knew. But we didn't hunt.
Right.
I mean, well, shoot, if you're getting the free venison, like, there wasn't a need to. Let the other guy sit, spend the day in the stand, come through, say thank you. Like, all right.
All right. Come
like,
back.
I'm good.
Come
like, back. Like why?
Let
why?
Them do all the let them do all the work. And the funny thing is, back in those days, I would imagine there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, like what we do now, where we're running cameras and you're scouting all year round and you got a feed plan and like all this stuff. You just go out there and you look for a little bit of sign and then you just camp out there and wait for something to happen and then bang!
There you go.
That's all it was.
There you go. You know, and so that property is still in the family. And so, I know there were deer back there, big deer back there. I know there were turkeys through there. Haven't been a lot of people hunting in that area because on that property, there's 80 acres. So there's a lot of space, man. A lot of space.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, when you come, when we get home in July, we'll have another conversation and whatever you need me to do, we'll figure it out.
We'll make it happen.
As I figured it would happen, we would get on the subject and pretty much eat up the time that I like to do these in. So because, like I said, in the beginning, I have access to you, I'm going to bring you back a couple more times and we're going to get into the trucks and just engineering and stuff.
Oh, man, no problem.
I'm always amazed by your hand in the stuff that you have at Ford and just, you know, our love together for like trucks and the stuff that we can do for trucks.
Oh, we'll save that for the next conversation, man.
Definitely.
Yeah, we got some good stuff to talk about if you're a truck guy.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Bernie, I'm gonna get out of here. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Thanks a lot, Adam.
Thank you once again to Mr. Bernie Samuel for coming by the Bryantland Country Podcast. It is always great when I can have a friend of mine just come through and shoot the breeze like we did. Bernie's a great guy, great family man, and I sure appreciate him taking the time. Big Second Amendment guy, big gun guy. So it was great to sit down with him and just pick his brain and kind of talk to him a little bit. Really, really appreciate him taking the time. As for me, I'm going to go ahead and get out of here this week. Thank you for listening to the Bryantland Country Podcast. Turkey season's getting wound up. I'm trying to get a couple of turkey-related guests for you guys just to kind of give you some knowledge and just get some good turkey stories out there, get you geared up for the turkey season. So we're going to work on that. But in the meantime, you guys continue to subscribe, continue to rate, continue to download. You know all the places where you can get it. iTunes, TuneIn, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, all those places. Just continue to tell five people to tell five more people. And make sure you guys come on back next week for another episode of the Bryantland Country Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Bryantland Country Podcast, hosted by AB3. Please leave us a positive review and 5-star rating on iTunes. Be sure to check out our podcast section on our website, BryantLandCountry.com, for previous podcasts. Check us out on Instagram at Official Bryantland and Twitter at 3BryantLand. This has been an AB3 Media production. Join us next time for another edition of the Bryantland Country Podcast.